Hello, and welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharakana. We invite you to join us on Thursdays at 8 p.m. for an engaging exchange with us and our special guest as we cover various topics regarding history, genealogy, and your personal family history stories. Hello, I'm Janice Gilliard.
And I'm Sharakana Feliciano. Welcome to Speak On It, History and Genealogy Conversations with Janice and Sharakana. Thank you for joining us, and be sure to check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Today, we're joined by our guest, Dr. Walter Curry Jr.
Dr. Walter B. Curry Jr. is a native of Orangeburg, South Carolina. Dr. Curry received a bachelor's degree in political science from South Carolina State University and has earned several graduate degrees in education, including a doctorate degree in curriculum and instruction from Argosy University, Sarasota. In 2018, Dr. Curry launched Renaissance Publications, LLC. That same year, he published his first genealogy book, The Thompson Family, Untold Stories from the Past, 1830 to 1960. The book chronicles the reflections and experiences of his relatives that shed new light on African-American history in Aiken County and South Carolina.
For his book, he received the 2019 African-American Historical and Genealogy Society Book Award for the nonfiction category genealogy. On February 12, 2020, the South Carolina legislature recognized Dr. Curry for his significant work and service to African-American history and heritage in South Carolina. His most recent project is Sally and the Thompson Family, an exhibit in the Aiken County Historical Museum that featured the founding of Sally, South Carolina, and the illumination of his ancestors and relative stories through artifacts and primary sources. Welcome to Speak On It, Dr. Walter Curry Jr.
Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you here with us today. So we're going to go ahead and get started. And our first question is, what inspired your interest in family history and in writing your book about the Thompson family?
What motivated me to write the family history book about the Thompsons? My great-grandmother, Alice Thompson Seawright, with her family, I have discovered that many of her relatives, some who I had the pleasure to meet, her siblings were alive. During my younger days, some of her first cousins and second cousins, they shared considerable family history about the Thompsons. And what I found out that my ancestors, many of them who were enslaved, for instance, there was an ancestor named Mills Thompson who was able to purchase his own freedom. With the aid and assistance of local whites, and also was able to purchase the freedom of his two daughters, Charlotte and Clara. And then I find out that I'm a descendant of an enslaved cook, Lavinia Corley Thompson, who served as a cook in the Confederate Army during the Civil War. And then remembering some of the stories that I was told, I was able to identify primary sources, mainly newspaper articles that corroborated some of those stories. I found out that I was kin to a prominent soil conservationist. His name was Philip Thompson.
Wow.
During the 1940s, he was able to use his land for soil conservation efforts. He contracted with the Edisto Soil Conservation District. Very intriguing, interesting information about his work in soil conservation. And then my great-great-grandfather, Oscar Thompson, he was a sharecropper who became an entrepreneur. He bought and sold real estate to his family and friends. He owned over 200 acres of land. That land is still in our family as of today. And I also located a news article about him and several other African-American farmers who went to the PD area, to the Coker seed plant, to learn about seed breeding practices and other agricultural practices. And the seed plant was located in Hartsville. And so I was able to gather all this information and put it together in a book. And the Thompson family owned tool stores from the past, from 1830 to 1960.
Wow.
That is amazing. That is powerful. And your ancestors in soil conservation, you know, makes me think about how we have always played a pivotal role in environmental awareness in our own way and taking care of the land and been working this land for centuries. So that was really, really cool.
Yes, it is. It is. Just want to elaborate on that. Philip Thompson, interesting story about him. His parents, his mother, Ravonna Corley Thompson, died when he was young. His father, Joseph Pitts Thompson, left with a white mistress during the 1900s in Sally. And him and his siblings, Philip, had to raise themselves. I'm sure there was other relatives who helped them. But Philip Thompson was able to purchase 95 acres of land, and he used that land for soil conservation. He also ran terraces, basically rows which hold the water when it rains into those terraces, into those lines, like dirt roads. And the purpose of terraces is to hold the rainwater to prevent soil conservation. I mean, to prevent soil erosion. Also use animals to do soil conservation work. He used horses to construct the terraces. He even told his pigs to go out and eat the Kobe Lepenza, which is an invasive plant. And he found out that method saved him money on purchasing hay. So he didn't have to purchase a lot of hay. The hay is very expensive. If you're on the farm, you know, that hay could be very costly. So he planted the Kobe Lepenza, and he encouraged his pigs to eat it. So that's another way.
Our ancestors were very educated, and they knew exactly what they were doing when it came to conservation and farming.
That's right.
Oh, absolutely. They did.
Savvy and industrious.
Yes.
So
yes.
Publishing a book is no small feat. And you wrote The Thompson Family. What was your process for researching and writing and publishing your book?
Basically, what I did, I focused on the oral narratives, began to write those oral narratives into written narratives, and then did research on corroborating the written narratives by looking at primary sources. Mm-hmm. I looked at newspaper articles on newspaper.com, which is an excellent resource. I also looked at deeds, particularly with my ancestor, Oscar Thompson, who was a landowner. I was able to acquire those deeds and get those deeds transcribed. I looked at military records of my ancestor, Lavinia Corley Thompson, who served in the Civil War. I was able to locate her Confederate state pension application. Also, I was able to trace where her master, Sam Webb, was during the Civil War. They were in Augusta, Charleston, all the way up to North Carolina. That was part of Confederate General James Johnson Army of the Tennessee. Mm-hmm. That army surrendered to Sherman, General Sherman, the Union Army in 1865. I also did research on cemeteries. I also visited my family church, Smyrna Missionary Baptist Church. Identified the grave markers of the individuals in the book, pictures. There were family members who shared pictures. Many of those pictures I were able to gather. And I could say that many of the individuals in the book, I have pictures. And so I did a lot of creative and innovative things to bring the book out. And when you look at the book consists of three chapters. You have the Genesis that features the beginnings of the origin of the Thompson family. Then the narrative essays, which is the actual stories about the individuals in the book, because I wanted to bring perceptions, my feelings, analysis, that's what it's called, the narrative analysis, are basically my reflections. And I believe that it's important that we reflect upon our ancestral stories. And when you read those narrative analysis, you will find out that I focus on personal reflections, African-American history, even contemporary ideas that I've learned from my ancestral stories and how we could apply those ideas to benefit ourselves and our community today.
Now, before we move on, I do recall seeing that you had a cousin's gathering, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
How did that go?
That went well. That's my first cousin's on the Seawright side. My mother, Cheryl Seawright Curry, is 46 of us. It seems like the family keep growing and growing. And family reunions is very common on my mom's side of the family. The Thompson family reunion started back in 1987. What's so interesting about that reunion, I was able to use some of the information in the reunion book as part of writing the book. I was able to locate a oral narrative that was recorded from my ancestor, Lavinia, and how she said that she was beaten by the slave auctioneer because she refused to be sold, and how her and her sister, Laura Wooder Evans, overheard the conversation, and they overheard where they were going to be sold to, because at the time, the slave owner, his name was Joshua Corley, he fell on hard times. And as we know, slave owners, when they fell on hard times, the first thing they did, they sold the slaves. And so my ancestor Lavinia said that her white dress became bloody because of the beating that she took from the slave auctioneer. And so that was in the family reunion book. And that's why I'm a very adamant supporter of family reunions, because many family reunions have family histories recorded, and that could be a starting point to write your family history as well. And so when you look at also the social context of families, and again, that tradition from the Thompson side, the Seawright side, of all of us coming together, having a good time, not worrying about, you know, what we do, where we are. We just want to have a good time and enjoy ourselves. Because when I think about it, when you look at my ancestor, Lavinia Corley Thompson, who served in the Civil War, I mean, she served on the Confederate side, but yeah. I will say to everyone, regardless of what side, if she did not survive the Civil War, my second great grandfather, Oscar Thompson, would have not been born. Mm-hmm. My great grandmother, Alice Thompson Seawright would have not been born. My grandfather, Wallace Seawright, would have not been born. My mother, Cheryl Seawright Curry, would have not been born. And then me and my two boys. And so for survivors of the Civil War on both sides, and particularly us as African-Americans, descendants, we should be thankful and grateful that our ancestors survived. And for African-Americans, it was a tough time after slavery. I mean, you talk about, you know, the Black codes in the South, you know, the Reconstruction era was, you know, in particular in Aiken County, where the Thompsons live, the Hamburg Massacre, it was a lot of crazy things went on at that time. And for my ancestor to endure all of that, for her to, you know, to endure that and to have that determination, it's really a blessing and an honor to say that I am a descendant of hers.
Exactly.
And the fact that I'm alive because she had the will to survive.
I always think, in my mind, I keep thinking that they have to feel like a better day is coming. It's not good for me right now, but for my descendants, those coming after me, a better day has to be coming. Did you do some artwork? You did some artwork when you were talking about her. I was thinking about that.
Yes. That artwork was actually an inspiration of mine. I'm looking to title the artwork real soon. And the artwork focuses on the stories in the book to bring those stories alive through art. And two paintings of Lavinia, one painting called Enslaved Ancestor and Enslaved Experience, focus on her narrative, the narrative that she told to her grandchildren about her being whipped by her slave auctioneer. The enslaver. I wanted to bring that out. So it's a two-dimensional painting. And the second painting focused on her service in the Civil War. I wanted to show on the Confederate side that Blacks and white soldiers, servants, whatever capacity that they serve in, they were integrated. The Union soldiers were segregated. You had the Black units were segregated and you had the white units. But on the Confederate side, Blacks and whites who served were fairly integrated. So I want to show that and also to show her experience as a cook. One thing about Civil War cooks, particularly on the Confederate side, they were very important. They fed the troops, but on the Confederate side, it did much more than that because the Confederacy did not have a lot of food producing factories like the Union had. The Union was very industrious than the Confederacy. And so many of the Confederate soldiers had to hunt for their food. Some even went and plundered food from nearby states. Plantations. And you look at the fact that cooks like my ancestor, they were in supervisory roles. They told the soldiers when and where and how they were going to eat. Okay. If they wanted deer meat, you know, the cook said, okay, you want that deer meat? You got to go out there and kill it. And not only you got to go out there and kill it, you got to wait on me to prepare the food. But the foods that Confederate cooks prepared for soldiers are the foods that we eat today, like Johnny cakes, whole cakes. Mainly, you think about your biscuits, potato salad, salmon patties. I mean, I have a Confederate cookbook of all Confederate recipes.
Wow.
And so I use that as part of my presentation about Lavinia to show that the foods that her and other cooks prepared for the soldiers.
Wow. It's interesting. I did find one record of one of my ancestors that he was the cook for on the Confederate side. He's the only one that I've discovered on the Confederate side. And I just came back from D.C. and the U.S. Colored Troops, the Civil War Memorial Wall. So I was able to get a record for Chiricahua and then several of my own. Moving forward, you're writing. I'm sorry. Yeah, I think everybody should definitely go there, but make sure they have their information ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Your writing center on South Carolina families. What would you like the listeners to know about South Carolina and African American history?
Yes. Center of African American history in the country. I mean, you look at the great historians and thinkers and scholars, Henry Louis Gates, who I'm a fan of, and others like him. They come to South Carolina to do research. Charleston is the epicenter of African-American history, not only in South Carolina, but in this country. And the reason why is because South Carolina was one of the 13 colonies, okay? And even before the 13 colonies were founded, South Carolina played a huge part in the pre-colonial era, okay? And so when you look at South Carolina families, I think about it in terms of how our families here in South Carolina are connected to the broader topics and aspects of history itself. And when we think about family history, we should think about it in terms of not only our family history, but local history, right. Because there are stories in our family that connects to local history, and outside of local history, topics of African-American history, state history, and national history. And so South Carolina has rich resources of African-American history. I would encourage folks to come to South Carolina. The South Carolina Department of Archives and History is a great center. It's a government agency where you can come and do research about your ancestors. You also have the Avery Center down there in Charleston. I haven't been yet, but they have records that focuses on African-American history in Charleston, slavery and African history, which in South Carolina, you have the Gullah tradition, which is very strong. And we
need to grow and growing.
I'm very encouraged that the Gullah Geechee community is doing that because we need to know about African history. You know, we talk about African-American history, but African history is very, very important because Africa itself is a very diverse continent. I mean, you're talking about the cradle of civilization and everything, whether it's religion, whether it's science, mathematics, other subjects of knowledge originated from Africa. And the Gullah culture is an indigenous culture. It's not a culture that has been mixed with other cultures. It's indigenous, from my understanding. It's original. So there's a lot of things that we can learn from the Gullah culture that connects us to our African past. Recently, in Aiken County, my good friend Wayne O'Brien, he's done a tremendous job. He's from Charleston. As well as the Center for African American History, Art and Culture in Aiken, they have brought out Dave the Potter, a slave in Edgefield, who created pieces of authentic pottery that focus on his African culture, messages, inscripted in his work that we need to know about. So you're talking about indigenous African culture right there in Edgefield, near Aiken County. So South Carolina is, in my opinion, the epitome of African-American historical scholarship.
And if people can't get there, just real quick, if they can't get to the archives, they you can go onto their website and submit an inquiry online, and they respond right away.
Very quickly, so. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah, they do. I would also suggest to listeners that have your information together. That will be very helpful. There's a gentleman by the name of Steve Tuttle. I've used Steve Tuttle a lot. I send him inquiries, and he will get back with you. And so it is a great resource. And Steve Tuttle, he focuses on genealogy, but he also is very knowledgeable of the resources there at the archives. So I encourage your listeners to, do their homework, research as much information possible, make it easier for the folks at the archives to help out.
I met Steve Tuttle in May. He was one of the speakers for Terry James at Francis Neely yes. University for his Jamestown right. Foundation. Very, very nice right. guy.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
So can you share some of the interesting and fascinating things that you discovered while doing your research?
I'll tell you, Millis Thompson. Now, I'll tell you about Millis Thompson. he was my ancestor, Logan Thompson, the oldest brother. He was born on October the 5th, 1830. And his first wife, Laura Thompson, they had two children, Charlotte and Clara. And Laura was sold to a slave owner near the Myrtle Beach era. Mm-hmm. And Millage and his two daughters were kept together. And he was able to purchase his freedom with the aid and assistance of local whites. And he was able to purchase the freedom of his daughters, Charlotte and Clara. And so after the Civil War, many freedmen like Millage wanted to locate their loved ones. And he discovered that his first wife survived slavery. She lived in Charleston and she had a son named George Thompson. And Millage went on to marry Amanda Friday Thompson, and they had 16 children. And upon finding out about Laura, Millage took care of two wives, his first wife and his second wife.
Wow.
Were they in the same?
Well, that's better than abandoning the wives.
he didn't abandon them. And see, Millage and Amanda, they lived in Sally. He purchased over 100 acres of land. He paid $2 an acre. And Amanda, she had a garter on the right side of her neck. Millage and Amanda, their children and grandchildren, they are on the front cover of the Thompson book. Millage is and Amanda there at the bottom, and there's a picture of them, and that picture is in the appendix section in the book which lists Millage, his wife, and all of the children and grandchildren. But that story intrigues me because of the fact that he took care his second wife, but he saw a need to take care of his first wife as well. And so that was very interesting.
That is interesting. And I have to say, I prefer those stories and the ones we hear about when they flee and leave the women and children struggling. Like, I'll take this story.
Yeah.
That's encouraging.
That is encouraging. So he didn't leave Laura out.
Right.
And that tells you a lot about his character. You know, Miller right. Thompson was a deacon at Smyrna Missionary Baptist Church, our family church, and he was well respected in the community. In fact, the Brody family, a prominent white family in the community, and the Thompsons were very close. And there was a gentleman, I don't know his first name, but his last name was Brody. And when he died, Miller Thompson was listed on, I think on the will, I believe. It was a document that he was a witness to the will. So that tells you about the character that he had in the community.
Thank you for sharing that. That is like, that's, I like that. That warmed my heart.
So you have presented on a variety of genealogy topics, including on the narrative inquiry approach. Can you tell us what this is and how it relates to writing family history books?
Yes, the narrative inquiry approach. I learned about that when I was a doctoral student at Argosy, because when I was writing my book, I didn't have no prior experience. So I was like, well, how am I going to bring stories out? It just can't be about just the stories.
Right.
I was like, there's something missing. And so I went back to my my graduate studies and found out about the narrative inquiry. And the narrative inquiry is actually a qualitative approach which is used to analyze narratives. Because when you analyze narratives, you're bringing the narratives out using reflection as a way to do that. And so the beautiful thing about the narrative inquiry is it provides the writer to reflect upon the narratives, thinking about how they feel about the individuals in the story, the events in the story. And also be creative in connecting those events to other topics. And so that's really, you know, the fun part. You know, yeah. I look at, you take Isaac and Charlotte Quarterbaum story in the book. The narrative analysis, we as African Americans can use other economic means to survive. And I go back into Isaac because he was a certain mill owner. And when customers came to him and they didn't have any money, he would barter. He would say, okay, you want syrup? Give me your jugs. I will provide the syrup. And so he learned bartering when he was a slave in the Batesburg-Leesville area. And many slaves did that. They bartered. They didn't have no money to exchange. And so bartering is a concept. The IRS still legalized or recognized bartering and how we can actually barter with each other if we need things from each other. And there are, I would say, research on bartering practices in our community from various scholars. And so I touch on bartering as a tool that we could use as a people to do things without any exchange of money. I also, look at land ownership, how important land ownership is in our community, particularly with Miller Thompson. Miller Thompson land was sold. If we would have kept the land, look where we would have been today. We would have done a lot of good things with the land. But because the land was sold and there was infighting in the family, we lost it. And so I touch on how important land ownership is in our community. And there were a variety of of topics that I focus on, even with the Civil War, the narrative analysis about Lavinia, about how Frederick Douglass actually reported in his newspaper, the Douglass Monthly, which he reported that there were Blacks who served in the Confederacy. And when he reported that, he used that to recruit Blacks into the Union Army, because the Confederacy was winning. The Union was losing. And if it wasn't for Frederick Douglass to press Lincoln to recruit Blacks, the Confederacy would have won the war. But Frederick Douglass, he saw he heard that there were Blacks were being used for the Confederacy, and that gave him the motivation to pressure Lincoln to recruit Blacks to fight for the Union. So that content is in the narrative analysis, and it's a very easy way to bring the stories of your ancestors out, because we should always reflect and think about their lives, their struggles, their achievements, the good, the bad, and the ugly. We need to look at the whole totality of our ancestors. Not all our ancestors did some good things. You know, they had their shortcomings, mm-hmm. they had their faults. And we need to acknowledge that. We need to know that, particularly with, you know, mental health issues in our community, with health issues in our community. We need to know about that and how we can learn from that. And so the narrative analysis provide a way for writers to do that.
Excellent. And what role, and I feel like what you just said kind of leads nicely into this next question, what role does learning and sharing family history play in understanding African-American history?
I that's a great question. When I think of African-American history, I think about my family history, mm-hmm. because I believe that if we're going to really understand and appreciate African-American history, it starts with our family. You know, we read about African-American history in books, and we attend lectures and presentations and so forth, but it's really based on the interpretation of others. And I'm not discounting that, but what I am discovering that our family history makes African-American history more meaningful. Like, for instance, you know, we read about slave narratives. We read about stories of slaves and what they went through.
Right.
But it makes it more interesting and more meaningful when you read about slave narratives from your own family. And it gives you a better understanding about slavery, okay? Because slavery itself, you know, the topic is so very diverse. I mean, we're learning about slavery almost every day. And there are many scholars and many folks out there who are adding to it. And that's one thing about general topics of history. What I'm finding out is topics like slavery, the information is always added. And sometimes you can get, you know, confused and get caught up because there's so much information about it. But when you know about your enslaved ancestors and what they went through, then that's for you. You know, that's your family history in which you can. Then it gives you an impetus to learn more about the broader topics of slavery. So I always say that African American history begins with the family. That's why it's important that we spend time with our elders and learn from them, because oral history is a part of the tradition, the historical tradition of our people. Word of mouth, particularly in slavery, many slaves couldn't read and write. So what they did, they passed down knowledge from word of mouth. The Thompson family book, Millis Thompson, his story, the story of Isaac and Charlotte Thompson Quarterbaum, Joseph Pitts Thompson, those stories were passed down orally. Okay, and thank God I was able to remember the content. And then I interviewed family members who knew about those stories. But we also have to look at the oral family history because you got to make sure that it's factual. Okay.
Right.
So written sources, primary sources are extremely important. But to sum it up, African-American history is family history. And I always believe that history starts with the family. Believe it or not, when we read about history, we're reading about families. Okay.
That's
George
right.
Washington, Thomas Jefferson, you know, I mean, they're individuals who were a part of families.
Right.
So family history is the backbone of history itself.
I love this answer. And I really might use what you just said with credit, of course, because, you know, first of all, I like asking this question because, you know, we do family history, we do genealogy. But what you said, I mean, you said it gives us a better understanding, impetus. It's part of the tradition of oral history, and it is the backbone of African-American history. So just such a profound answer. And I love that. I love that.
Thank you. Thank you.
And when you were talking about the slave narratives, I actually have several for some of my ancestors, and they are powerful. And one of them actually describes in detail her daily life. So in closing, what are some parting words you would like to share with our listeners, and where can they go to learn more about you or contact you?
Yes, my parting words is this, to all the listeners out there, begin to discover your roots, begin to discover your family history, and begin to do that, because like I said, family history is African-American history. And for listeners who want to know more about my work, feel free to visit my website at www.renaissancepubllc.com. Again, www.renaissancepubllc.com. And I am also active on social media.
All right. You want to give us your social media tags?
I'm sorry?
You want to give us your social media tags?
Yes.
My
social media tag is www.facebook.com/Renaissance Publications LLC. Again, that's www.facebook.com/Renaissance Publications LLC.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Dr. Walter Curry Jr., we want to thank you so much for joining us on Speak On It. We enjoyed talking to you today and having you with us today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I really enjoyed the interview.
Okay, good. Glad to hear that. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. And we look forward to sharing with you during our next segment of Speak On It.
Speak On It is a podcast and is immediately available to listen to at your leisure. Thank you.
Thank you. Y'all have a wonderful day.